Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning, everybody. I'm JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy.
Baby Friday.
Tis the Baby Friday. I gotta confess something. You know when, like, there's... It's like, I feel like I'm going crazy. Like, I'm one of those guys in the movie where it's like, I see the patterns. I see, all I see is this. The number 13. 13. The number. I see the number. All I'm seeing right now is, like, former Leafs doing awesome things. You know? Tyler Bozak's scoring goals. And Zach Hyman is playing with a crazy amount of force. It's all just, you know, former Leafs. I'm almost expecting, like, a random... Oh, I thought JVR was still on the Flyers. I didn't realize that he was
Cody
actually...
Cody Ceci gets the series-clenching goal.
That's what I mean.
On his own net, or...
It's just... Cody Ceci has actually had some decent games, honest to God.
He's been all right.
Like, it's weird. He has been all right. But that's it. It's like, all I see is former Leafs. Zach Hyman, big moments. Nazem Kadri hat tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Bozak game-winning goals. And all my takes are like, I'm texting Blake yesterday about how there's a Boston Celtics. We're both doing our Boston Celtics-Toronto Raptors parallels, and they're two different ones. Like, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs have officially broken me this offseason, where it's like, all I see is Leaf stuff. All I'm seeing is, like, Leafs parallels. And now I've gone full Batman villain in terms of, like, I was rooting against Mike Smith because I wanted someone else to choke, right? I was like, someone else be the story, you know, somebody else. And now the Colorado Avalanche, who had, oh boy, they had the St. Louis Blues against the ropes in an elimination game. I'm a little sour because we had them in the Wake and Rake too, so there's a little extra villainous spice to this one. I was getting excited for this, hey, McCarr, McKinnon, McDavid, the Triple M series, you know, like the M&M series. And instead, now I'm just like, why don't you blow it? You know, like, I'm full snake mode. I just want to see chaos. I want the Colorado Avalanche now so badly to join the Toronto Maple Leafs in misery. Misery loves company? Correct. Correct. Because Colorado, I tweeted this yesterday, but they're second round Leafs. Like every year in the McKinnon era, they get to the second round and then they lose. And I had one of like their crybaby fans in my mentions yesterday going like, but we didn't lose the same way. We had some different losses that were harder to do and we weren't always fair. Boo-hoo, shut up. You know that if they lose this year, especially, like they have been basically gifted a position in the finals. They choked this after being up 3-0 at home in a game 5. It's going to go down as, like, one of the greatest Hall of Fame chokes in hockey history.
Especially with the goal that Nathan McKinnon scored that honestly might be a top 10 goal. The hat trick goal to make it 4-3. I stood there at my TV with my jaw open. Like, did that just happen? Replay after replay. It's funny when you go on Twitter and it's like, F Nathan McKinnon, and everyone just has nothing to say about it. It's just that was one of the most incredible goals I've probably ever seen. And that would have been so poetic. He scores that, they clinch the next round, you know, big comeback, it's a hat trick, and then they blow it. So it's like even more of your little narrative of Choke Central.
Are you guys with me on Choke Central?
No, I'm not there
yet.
Would
you like to join me on Team Evil, Team
Choke? I don't want to be on Team Evil.
Because clearly, because this is the thing that I want you... No, I clipped that, Josh. I don't want to be on TV. That reminded me of Moxley from...
I don't want your life.
Yeah, I don't want your life.
That's correct.
Team Evil. Which I love all the... I still reference that. I think that reference is very outdated, except I don't care. I still use it all the time with my friends.
Whenever they do anything stupid. James Vanderbeek can pretend to be in high school when he's like 35 in that movie... We can still reference it when we're 35.
It works. Yeah. So Team Evil has a drawback, which is that if St. Louis comes back to win this, you have to watch a series that's less compelling, right? Like, if this was to happen, like, Team Evil involves now Calgary and the St. Louis Blues, which mm-hmm. would be a rock fight of a dog fight of a who cares it series compared to McDavid versus MacKinnon, clearly. But it's so much sweeter. It's just it's just everybody has to shut up about the Leafs, you know? Like, it's just one of those things where I get a little bit of a shelter, a little bit of a protection layer where I go, ha! Like, you can't say anything about this. It's whataboutism 101. It's just that's what I want. But what about Colorado? And they're the second round chokers. Everyone's like, yeah, he's awesome. I was like, no one's saying blow them up, are they? There's no one saying trade McCarr, are they? What about that? What about
should they run it back?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I like about that. The Team Evil is. Team Evil has a real upshot, but the downside of having to watch that conference finals versus the other one is tough. I'll admit that even for the team captain of Team Evil, I have my questions, you know? Like, I do have my moments where the superhero would look at me and be like, why did you choose this life? And I'm like, it's like Two-Face.
Too late.
You know how yeah. Two-Face was like going back and
you
forth?
You were on the right path.
Yeah.
Why did this yeah. break you? Why did a sixth consecutive first-round yeah. exit break you, yeah. Harvey Dent? Yeah. So that one was who cares about the Waken Rake? Just from a hockey game perspective, that was amazing. In terms of
Waken Rake was
is...
already dead with that NBA game, all right? It was the worst thing I've ever bet in my life.
Yeah, it was a tough one.
So Colorado's up 3 goals in that game. And Colorado's whole thing all year has been, we're the team that gets big leads early and you can't come back. They were 39-4 this year when they were up by 2 goals, which the 39-4 record is remarkable. But being up by 2 goals 43 times is also pretty remarkable. It's hard to do that. Only the Leafs actually were up by that much more than the Avalanche as you'd have it. And the Leafs actually had a similar record, but 39-4 when leading heading into the third, and the Blues didn't have a lot of cover. They're 4-17 in those situations. So if you're worried about, you know, hey, what happened here for the Colorado Avalanche? What happened here to allow this? Is there something more to worry about? I'd say maybe, because this is very, very uncharacteristic of how the Colorado Avalanche have played all year. And I said yesterday, making the Waken Rake pick, every win they've had except for, I think, 2 in the postseason has been a multi-goal win. They're the team that puts teams away early. So to give that up and to not only give it up, but look pretty shook and unlike yourselves in the third period, it's got to be at least a little level of concern.
They're toast. They're toast. They're toast. No,
no
I'm serious.
Way.
Like, they're toast. Yeah, they're toast. They're going to go to St. Louis now, and it's going to be a legacy game for all those guys already. If they're going to lose game 6, like, and they have to win game 6. Like, they're going to lose game 6. St. Louis now, getting that win and having we have the belief momentum, that this is the Galchenyuk turnover. Like, that is the, oh my God, I cannot believe we did this. The goal that went in against them, too, was just like, it was, oh, God, Darcy Kemper.
The Bozak wins?
Yeah, the Bozak
one.
Yeah,
no,
hey,
not
listen,
ideal.
Tyler Bozak, I'm happy for you. Honestly, Bozak to me is, he's not an underrated Leaf because he was so incredibly overrated when he was here. Like, he gets, it's kind of like where it's leveling out now, right? Where Bozak was the number one guy where people went, but his stats are so good and he's doing, and it was just, he was okay. He was a good centerman. He was quality. It was a good find for the team, no doubt about it. But the idea that he was in some way overlooked or overshadowed was nuts. Nuts, nuts, nuts. That goal was horrific. That meltdown was horrific. I just can't imagine that Colorado team isn't feeling that pressure of, oh my God, we were right there. And
I still can't believe Bozak was on the ice. He played 12 minutes over the prior 2 games, and he's out there in
Mr.
OT.
Mr. Clutch Bozak, definitely the person I would have picked getting the OT.
You got to have him. Hey, listen, he's still a leader, and honestly, like, he's just a really respected guy.
Yeah, I love him as a guy. Everything I hear is great. I liked him as a Leaf and stuff, but he was playing. He had shifted into the full, like, Spezza role for St. Louis in this series, where his minutes had just steadily declined over the course of the playoffs, and he was getting those fourth line, you know, more fourth line checking than fourth line offensive minutes compared to Spezza. But
yeah, and guess what?
Bizarre to even see him on the ice there.
Overtime, pucks on net. Don't try to get too cute. And this was, people criticized the Leafs for this in game 6, and I tried to kind of dismiss it. But the more you just remember it and the more you think about it, And I will admit, even to my sickening self, that I rewatched that. I've rewatched both those Leaf games, just so you guys know.
You're sick.
I needed to have them locked into my brain so that when I was criticizing them, I felt my or evaluating that I looked at it with fresher eyes. I won't say fresh because there was still salt in the wounds. I was still a little salty. And so I actually found that when I did the rewatch, every little mistake that I saw, I amplified in terms of its importance. So
well, you know what's coming after, right?
You know the end result.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't know. I think Colorado are chokers. And I think that was a choker moment. And I would say that I just for fun, they're done. I'd like to see
who would know chokers better than the guy who's been doing Toronto sports radio.
Correct.
Maple Leafs the last few years.
I can see a choker. It's like I can see a choker, and I see Colorado choking, and
well,
I want it
back
to happen.
To St. Louis as well.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the swing piece. Honestly, I wonder how much the crowd can play into effect in a game like that. But that's why I tiptoe towards the choking bandwagon here, but I still have one foot in the same world.
Yeah, Ailish playing both sides? Oh, what do you know?
Yeah.
Ailish hedging her bets? Oh, what do you know?
I'm going to pick St. Louis to come back unless Colorado wins.
Yeah, Ailish is
and then we'll discuss. If it's a game seven, we'll talk.
Yeah, Ailish is
if it is a game six, then I know what I picked.
I think Kemper, you could see, if Kemper lets in a shaky goal in that game, they're dead. They're dead, 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 dead. And that's it. It's just you just got an awesome McKinnon game. You just got a forceful game from your superstar. What are the odds you're going to get that again? I don't know. I think they're in real trouble. They're in a sneaky amount of trouble for a team that's going to or that only needed to win one of the last three games. I don't think that all blown leads are equal for all franchises. And I do think that a team like Colorado that has all the expectations in the universe, and that was right there. And I don't know if you guys listened to Bieksa after, where he went, boy, they're probably already thinking about the next round series. It's just human nature to think that when you're up 3-0, to get
you're
hit
thinking
with
McDavid,
that.
McKinnon already, yeah.
Exactly. When they're thinking about their rest, and now they got to fly back to St. Louis. Think about what that flight must be like with those guys on that plane. Where they all had to get on there, it's getting on the flight late at night, everybody's getting on there. Everybody's looking around at each other. Nobody's really talking. You're just, oof.
They're definitely not going to the strip club.
Maybe they need that. Also, do you guys see Joe Thornton was like, I'm undecided on my career. I was like, buddy, it's decided. Yeah. I was like, it's decided for you.
Decisions to take it out of your hands, pal.
Yeah. I think that after last year's 20—can I talk about this actually for 2 quick seconds? Mm-hmm. This is the problem with athletes staying around too long, and I'm a huge Joe Thornton fan. Honestly, his whole career, I've always been a Joe Thornton guy. I don't view him as the world's biggest loser because he was on these competitive teams and just couldn't get over the hump. I do think that there is something to. I think that there is something to being happy to be here to a certain degree, that might post career ish. Be a little bit that, when you're the guy that everybody loves, when you're the guy that everybody just loves to hang with, and you got stripped of a captaincy later in your career, those are tougher looks. But man, Joe Thornton sticking around this long and going from the guy that everybody wanted to be one of the faces of their franchise to just can't let the game go guy, who can't really move anymore, who now is just wanting to be I want to be around the boys and have a fun time, which is, again, nothing really wrong with that, but it's a sport that covets winning so much, and now it kind of takes this and amplifies some of the losses in San Jose. I don't know. It's just this is not the best look. I would just say that. At some point, you have to be able to – this reminds me of the J. Cole thing where I was joking about it, where I'm going, J. Cole, be happy with your life, man. You're one of the most successful rappers of all time. You don't need to be playing in the Ontario Basketball League pretending this is some kind of – this entertaining this – you were a 1.4 points a game guy when NBA went to Africa. You're not a baller. You're not. You're a 40-year-old rapper. It's done. It's over for you. Your fate is sealed. And that's kind of how I feel with Jumbo. Anyway, sticking around too long. It's not always Tom Brady. You know what I mean? That's the outlier here. It's not the norm. Anyways, back to chokers.
So, one of my concerns if I'm Colorado here too is I know the final stats weren't that flattering for Ville Husso, but that's a guy who was better than Binnington.
He made huge saves
all year long, and it had some awful playoff games so far. To where, you know, they're riding with Binnington, and they're not turning to him until Binnington gets hurt again. Two of those McKinnon goals, you can't possibly blame the goalie on. Like, they're just no goalie stops those when McKinnon's pulling moves like that. The number of you called them 10 bell alarm saves, JD, or 911 saves if you prefer. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be a little worried Ville Husso found it, because he was really, really good in the regular season.
He was.
And if he's turned a corner there, you know, obviously Colorado is the offensive team, the team you expect to be able to score in the playoffs and has scored in the playoffs. But minor concern that you let him get his feet under him.
Okay, so this is going to be my other Leafs pivot here. Is like, I got to admit, I'm totally torn. And I think that anybody who's in a camp of they have to do something with the Leafs, like either they have to run it back. This actually reminds me a little bit of politics, where it's like, oh, you're in this definitive camp? Okay, well, then I don't want to really listen to you. If you've accepted that there are obvious, like, somewheres in the middles on this, that the truth lies somewhere in the middle here, then that's more what I'm going to gravitate towards. Because I'm watching all these Leafs players, and I know that Tyler Bozak is playing 12 minutes a night, and part of me goes, okay, yeah. And Nazem Kadri wasn't a salary cap loss so much as he was, you know, a trade loss and trying to balance out the roster. He was just a mistake. Like, honestly, that's just a mistake. And all general managers make them. Most don't make them that bad, but yeah, that's just a bad mistake. But seeing Zach Hyman in these playoffs and knowing, like, there's the potential of a Jake Muzzin move, right? Where people are going, well, you got to trade Jake Muzzin. And I'm on this team, you got to trade Jake Muzzin, from, in a sense, where I go, so you're going to tell me there's going to be another salary cap casualty, right? Like, Mikheyev is probably gone. He's going to walk in free agency. And you might have to trade Jake Muzzin now. And as much as we're excited about Mark Giordano signing on the cheap, it's like, so much of that is that it's signing on the cheap, right? It's like, yeah, you're getting a good player. But I think that in a big game, if Jake Muzzin's healthy, and I know that's a huge factor in this, and he's going right, you'd rather have Jake Muzzin in a playoff game than Mark Giordano. Like, I just, that's how I feel. Jake Muzzin was good for them in the postseason this year, and the idea that they're going to lose him again is like, guess what I could see? Is Jake Muzzin next year playing on a good playoff team, having another big playoff moment, and going, boy, this sucks. And I just, watching this happen over and over again, where it's, well, you know, you got to keep the core four together, and these guys had to get every dollar that they wanted, and William Nylander set out half of a season so that he would get every buck, and Mitch Marner's camp was furious that anyone would ever think that he wasn't Austin Matthews, and Matthews only got 5-year contract, and like going through, Tavares came here, but he also wanted his $11 million, his $11 million sheets. And the idea of watching other Leafs players have to leave and the team just get thinned out again and have to go back into the bargain bin and look for depth in all these other areas, it sucks, and I hate thinking about it. But then yesterday, I'm watching the Boston Celtics, and this is the parallel that I was kind of thinking of, and I pitched on Blake, is like, the Boston Celtics yesterday, they steamrolled the Heat in the fourth quarter. And they steamrolled the Heat in a game where Jason Tatum was not going. He was 1 of 9. He killed Ailish's wake and rake single-handedly in the first half by missing all of his shots. He's 1 of 9 in the first half. But the second half, and particularly like the fourth quarter, these guys put it away because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown go, we are the two best players in this series, and we are just going to take control of this basketball game. And they start knocking down shots. And the Boston Celtics had what were some pretty hot takes flying around them a year ago, which was, hey, do you trade one of these guys? Is it just not working? And do you trade Marcus Smart became a huge point in conversation around them too. And they moved Marcus Smart into a different role, and it worked out for this team. And now we're looking at the Boston Celtics, and it's very much like the NBA is closer to the NHL now, where it's like a league of parity more than it is a... It used to be that you couldn't compare these leagues because one was about individuals and superstar teams, and hockey actually is now the one where it's like they've got the dominant team in the Tampa Bay Lightning that's more reminiscent to the Warriors that you can't relate to, and the NBA is wide open. Any team in the NBA can win now. Like, you're going into next year, we'll do this conversation at a different time, but you feel way better about the Raptors moving forward in this NBA landscape than in the NBA landscape of like 5 years ago, 4 years ago. So I'm watching the Celtics and I'm going, they didn't trade Marcus Smart in a panic deal and get worse. They kept their talent. They rolled on talent with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and knew that they couldn't do better. And they tweaked around the edges. And I will say this, they did get a different coach. They got a different coach. They changed something. They didn't keep rolling it over the exact same way every year. But they made these tweaks and they made these changes around the core talent. And now I would say that they are, I won't say the heavy favorites to win the NBA Finals, but I would say that they are absolutely and unequivocally the favorites if they get into a series with the Golden State Warriors. And it makes me feel like, oh, right, this is why you run it back, and this is why Kyle Dubas is correct to continue to bet on talent, is that normally it does break through. So I can't have a definitive take. I do have some takes, like about fourth line needs to absolutely unequivocally be better, but it's like that's been my whole life saying the fourth line has to unequivocally be better as a Leaf fan. So I don't know. I'm torn by the Leafs because all I see in every sports story right now is the pain of the Leafs.
The Celtics are an interesting parallel. You're right. And, you know, there are a couple key differences, namely that, yes, Boston hasn't won a championship.
It's basketball, not hockey.
But this is also their fourth conference finals in this 8-year stretch, right? So they've shown an upward mobility there, and they've gotten closer than the Leafs have. But you're right. 7 years with Brad Stevens in the playoffs, and they move off of it. Marcus Smart, this is his 8th playoffs with this. So we can kind of draw that line as the start of this core. You could cut it off at 5 if you prefer, because Brown's been there for 6. Tatum's been there for 5. The big difference is 4 conference finals. Now, in terms of depth,
but basketball, that's where the sport is so different, is like a talented team making a conference finals is not that difficult. The Raptors made it look incredibly difficult.
Yeah. And we assume the Leafs would have made deeper playoff runs had they beat a Tampa or whatever. So, yes, they've had a little bit more success. They haven't got over the hump. The other thing that they've done well, and we'll see if the Leafs can replicate this with, you know, as Sandin and Liljegren continue to move up, or Topi Niemelä comes in, or whoever. But when we look at the Leafs' depth on forward especially, you haven't hit on the Grant Williams, Robert Williams, to a lesser extent, Peyton Pritchard type of guys, where all three of those guys were late first-round picks, and all three of those guys are being trusted in pretty decent roles in the postseason here. And yes, in basketball, you don't need as many players. You hit on 2 depth flyers and you're fine because you're only playing 8 guys in a big playoff game anyway, but they've still hit on those late first round picks, which are also, you know, that also provides you inexpensive contracts at the bottom of your cap sheet. So you can pay Tatum and Brown and Smart and Al Horford, you know, and then you do the trades you make isn't blowing up the core. It's like, well, maybe if we attach something to Josh Richardson, we can get Derek White.
No, but Blake, this is a great point. This is a great point by you, because this has been one of the biggest... The issue with the Leafs has not been keeping their stars. It's that they haven't drafted and developed essentially anybody behind them since they drafted those guys. Like, they haven't had a single hit where they've gone internal, nice piece that has come up behind the core and really been awesome. Like, Rasmus Sandin has been good. Rasmus Sandin hasn't been great. Like, he's entering his restricted free agency year, and he's never had a moment for them in the postseason. Frankly, like, the guy that had the best impact for them that was internal was Andreas Janssen, who kind of flamed out, but he was the cheap money contract where it was like he had that year where he won the Calder Trophy with the Marlies and came to the Leafs and had a forceful series with Boston, was red hot. But outside of him, like, who's the other internal guy that has really given them a ton of surplus value? Like, Kapanen?
It's not there. Yeah.
Like, anyway, they've lost so many pieces now. And the formula, this is the thing, is like, this formula doesn't seem to continuously be working. It's like, you cannot have no one come up from your prospects and continue to just let good players go and try to supplement them with lower impact veterans and expect to win. And you keep watching these playoff series and it's like other guys contribute down the lineup, and Toronto just hasn't had that. And it's going to be really tough, because I don't think they should bring back Pierre Engvall. Certainly not around the $2 million mark. I think that this year was the death knell for Pierre. I don't think he's the kind of player that they need moving forward, even though that line had a good identity. They're not going to be able to retain Mikheyev, in my opinion. So they're going to have to reshape that third line. Mm-hmm. And maybe that third line ends up being like they bump Kerfoot back down. They try to find somebody that plays up the lineup. They keep that defensive identity. But having that fourth line where over the course of a season, it's three veteran guys that can't really skate and can't really play and can't really give you any force. And we're debating between which 38-year-old to get on, send over the boards that can't play. Like, I just think that's over now. Like, that's done with this team. They're going to have to figure out if they're going to do the run it back, then they're going to have to figure out a better way to tinker around the edges and do a different formula, because this same idea, to me, like, that's done. This isn't working. You guys ready to talk about Vladdy?
Well, I just had one more thought on this one. Sure. And it's that, you know, a game last night for the Celtics where he's had ups and downs, absolutely, but Al Horford looks like the smartest and, you know, steadiest player on the floor. And yeah, there aren't really a whole bunch of Al Horfords readily available in the NHL, and he is almost 36, so maybe he's on the long end of what you'd want for the Leafs. But when Jason Spezza talks at the end of the season about we need guys who are a little more role versatile and are willing to change what they do for the playoff core, I think Al Horford is a great example of what that looks like. Yes, in another sport, but that's a guy who he's their version of being able to play on any of the top three lines and adjust his game to fit that. And that's important in the playoffs because you're going to need to change stylistically opponent to opponent. You're going to need to change stylistically game to game as certain things get taken away. And that's, you know, the Leafs had a couple guys where we were like, oh, maybe you can move him up. Maybe you can move him down. But like
maybe
Andrej Kasha being able to play the second and fourth line is not what we're – I don't think what Spezza's talking about.
There. No. But again, this is a good analogy, and if I can just build off of it a little, there's two things I think about with the Al Horford thing. Is one is that's a big game guy. That's a guy who, going back to college, has been playing in massive games. He played on a massive Florida team. You know, he's a high-end pedigree player. He's a guy who still is effective, who knows how to play a different role, but who's just intelligent and who is not afraid of a moment and who has been in big game after big game after big game with multiple different franchises. And that's what the Leafs need more of, is guys who you can lean on, who have played a ton in important moments, who are unafraid of the moment, who are unafraid to change. The problem is they got Al Horford because he was a big money contract that people went, well, we don't have space for this in Boston. And that's it. It's like, what does Toronto do there? Like, they can't make those moves. They kind of did with Mark Giordano, right? But it involved them giving up stuff and eating a salary, and then he ends up retaining. So I don't know. If Giordano can be their Al Horford next year, great. But I think it's going to require more. They're going to need more experience. They're going to need more. It's not about like the leadership anymore of having the coach, of the player coach, where you're going, wow, this guy, he really gave the Spezza rah-rah speech. Mm-hmm. To me, it's about like, no. It's about the leadership of having an Al Horford who knows when to push the ball up the floor as a big, who knows when he needs to hit a big shot in a corner three, who, when Marcus Smart isn't fully healthy, takes on more point guard responsibilities, who, when they go smaller, crashes the glass a little bit harder, who gives you what you need in the moment. That's the thing we always talked about with Kyle Lowry, by the way. Woof. Kyle Lowry, woof. But yeah, whoa. By the way, being on the other side of Kyle Lowry, where you're watching him as like no Raptors uniform and he's doing Kyle Lowry things like faking, getting hit in the face and diving and falling down just nonstop. Oh yeah, it hits real different. You start to understand a little bit why other fans were so mad. just saying, I know that's blasphemy, but you gotta admit it. Like, you gotta admit that it's different. You got to find those guys that know what the Kyle Lowry move is of give you what you need when you need it, and the Leafs don't have enough of those dudes. Big Blue Jays game tonight. Big narrative tipping point game. And we'll do this a lot more, and we'll save some of our stuff more for like John Morosi at 7. We got Dan Shulman today at 9. It's Baby Friday. It's the Fan Morning Show. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. Follow at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, at E. Blake Murphy, do all those things. But I've said to you guys before, there have been these narrative tipping points, right? Narrative tipping point number one was Kikuchi, and he did the damn thing. And then he started to pitch better. He did. And not because we said anything, but it was just like, hey, this guy felt like he was teetering one of two ways, and he needed to have a moment. He had it, and he built off of it. Number two tipping point was heading into last weekend, where I said, I think that if the Jays offense continues to struggle, it's going to become a major storyline and people are going to start to turn on the whole it's early thing because we're getting close to June. It's exactly what happened. Narrative tipping point number three is going to be, I think that the criticisms of Vladdy are going to start to get a little harsher and a little louder if he stinks in this series against the Angels. Because right now what you have is Joe Maddon being in, quote, awe of Mike Trout's greatness. And I know Blair, I agree with Blair. Like, baseball is a sport where guys can't go head-to-head. It's the quarterback thing. But great players get compared to great players. And we talked about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as though he was the best hitter in the game today. And Mike Trout is doing Mike Trout things. And watching those two guys this series, if it's going where Vladdy's beating ground balls into the dirt, like over the shortstop, and Mike Trout's lifting his team to victories and going, you know, 3 or 4, or 2 or 3 with a walk and getting a home run, it's not going to be a good look for Vladdy. If Shohei Ohtani plays and pitches against this team and strikes out Vladdy a couple of times or gets him to ground out a bunch of times and then lifts one over the fence, people are going to go, oh, right, that MVP award was pretty justified for the guy who does both things and both things well. And that people shouldn't be sour about this. And maybe Vladdy was a little too obsessed with this in the offseason. Maybe he put too much pressure on his shoulders this offseason. I hope that those narratives don't come true. But what I'm saying is, this is could go the other way too. Vladdy turns it around against this team. And we go, oh right, this is the guy. This is why we compared him to these dudes. But this is a weird one where normally in baseball, it's not about comparing stars. Because frankly, nobody cares about stars in baseball. But I kind of feel like this weekend for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or whatever, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, is going to be pretty big for the Vladdy tipping point, like when it comes to the way that we talk about him for the next little while.
Especially with Shohei pitching tonight, starting the series off, I think that tonight's game is absolutely massive for Vladdy. You know, he was obviously disappointed with the way that the MVP voting kind of happened. Last time they played was August 21st last season, and the only time they played, and it was like in the heat of the the MVP debate, right? Like they were both doing extremely well, and then Vladdy cools off, and then Shohei gets all of the first place votes, and he kind of brushes it off like he's a stoic guy when it comes to this type of like personal success. Like he's, oh, this doesn't matter to me too much. But you've seen it, I think, matter in what he does and what he doesn't say. So tonight, especially, big moment, I think, to come in, make that statement, a little bit of extra motivation, some lingering feelings from last year. But there's no way that you're not thinking, if you're Vladdy or you're Shohei, that, hey, this is the second time that these two young all-stars are going to match up against each other. And it's the first time this season after how last year went for both of them. I'm really excited to see that. And then, you know, maybe create that rivalry that we've been talking about that maybe exists in baseball, maybe doesn't exist in baseball. Well, we can see how today goes and maybe that becomes something moving forward.
So Vlad is too smart and too big a baseball nerd to not feel like this is a huge weekend, right? Like, even if it's not, maybe it's not on the national consciousness or whatever, because there'll be late games. And
yeah,
it's,
we're done with that, right? Like, we're done with the whole idea that that there's some kind of, like, person in Boston right now who's going, did you hear? It's Vladdy versus, like, no, there's none of that ever happening. Like, that's never going to happen. That's why Ayla's, like, the rivalry thing. I'm like, I think that it's more of, like, an internal fiery thing. Yeah. But anyone else who makes the comparisons is just like, nah, like, this is a national spotlight game. It's like, no, you know what's bigger today for most people in the States is, again, like, Phillies Braves. You know,
anything,
like, whatever.
Yeah.
Anything that's in the States, whatever is happening in your market today is bigger than Vladdy versus Shohei and Trout.
So, look, Vlad knows he hasn't performed up to his standards. He knows he's up against Ohtani and Trout. He knows that at least in Toronto, there are going to be a ton of eyeballs on this series despite the start times. He's going to be fired up. I think we're going to see a Vladdy in the dugout that has a lot of that kind of good, anxious energy that we see Vlad with in the dugout a lot of the time, where he's just so excited to be getting up the hit and so excited to play ball. I can't imagine they let him DH, because we've seen what it's like between innings when he's DHing, and I think he'd drive himself up the wall a little bit.
No.
But yeah, it's huge, and he has to be fired up for it. And look, the honest truth is, at least tonight, if you don't get the bat going against Shohei Ohtani, who has one of the greatest strikeout-the-walk performances so far this year like we've ever seen. Maybe that's fine, but you got to get something going on the weekend. You got to carry over that 8-1 win from the other day. As a team, you got to start getting some hits with runners in scoring position. And look, this isn't always the case for baseball. Sometimes a star can perform well when their team's not performing well, or a team can perform well when their star's not doing it. But we haven't seen that over the last 3-4 years with this Blue Jays team. As Vlad goes, so this offense goes. And you need to have a Vlad performance if this team's going to pick up some momentum and take 2-4 against the Los Angeles Angels.
Well, it's going to be a lot about being in the moment tonight for Vladdy. And our first story on the A-list is about living in the moment and maybe being rewarded for that. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590. 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Happy Baby Friday. Hope you're enjoying the day so far. And if you're listening on the podcast, hope it's going well. The A-list
hope you're enjoying
today.
The harsh reality of waking up before 7 a.m. and you're
yes,
startled.
If you are, you're grinding it. You get that bag, King. First story on the A-list is about somebody that got that bag, King.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong, bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, you're either gonna love this or you're gonna think it's super tacky. So, a story about being in the moment, as I mentioned. There was a golf fan known by the name of just Mark. Mark. Mark went viral at the PGA Championship last weekend after he is spotted in the background of a photo where Tiger Woods is teeing off and every single fan in the photo has their phone up taking photos of Tiger Woods. And Mark is standing there with a beer in his hand and both of his actual eyeballs watching Tiger Woods. No phone in sight, just enjoying the moment. Now, he's drinking a Michelob Ultra, and Michelob sees the opportunity to turn this into a viral marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. They create an ad where it's panning across the photo, and you see all these people on their phones. Like, I swear, every single person in the photo is on their phone. And then it zooms into Mark, who's got his Michelob Ultra, and they create the slogan, "It's only worth it if you enjoy it." Mm-hmm. Then they've now created a merch line. You can buy the Mark hat and the Mark t-shirt with the tagline. And it just, it's a very different type of thing that we've seen. It's very unique, but it's also, I think, very fitting for the golf world. Tacky or smart?
Well, it's obviously smart. I don't think it's that unique because this is something we tend to do is, like, listen, we all get preachy with our phones when we're the ones that aren't using our phone.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We all love to be, oh, everybody's on their phones too much, and this is a classic case of everybody being on their phone. And I will admit that I go through these experiences too, right, where you go, well, your brain convinces you that, like, why you're taking this photo is to document something and have it mm-hmm. for yourself later on down the line. And sometimes that is true. And I'm sure there are some of you out there that take photos and you go look through your photo albums and you relive your memories by looking through those photos, and it's nice to have them. Like, but I do think that oftentimes, and I've been guilty of it, we're all guilty of it, so I'm not going to get overly like, and the rest of you, but I'm aware of it at least, and I think we all should be, is like, A lot of times that's just you taking a photo to show other people that you're doing something. Like if Instagram mm-hmm. didn't exist, or Facebook, or whatever your platform of choice is to show the world what little pieces of your reality you want to show, is like it's
your highlight
status.
Reel of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Like your life highlight reel. How much better would it be if you just lived in the moment with a lot of different stuff? I know that I'm guilty of this sometimes too, where mm-hmm. I want to make a post for social at a Blue Jays game, and I hold my phone up for the final out in the ninth. And instead of just like, hey, how about you just enjoy mm-hmm. the final out of the ninth? That's certainly better than the whole like start and restart of the shot every picture. Like, it's 100% accurate. Like, you are going to enjoy it more if you put the phone down. But it does require, like, sometimes acknowledgement of, hey, I don't need 80 pictures of Tiger Woods. I'll get a picture of Tiger Woods when I'm close. Take a picture of Tiger Woods. But I don't need 80 of them, and I don't need to continuously search out the greatest picture of him to post to social, rather than just kind of, like, if it is really for you, then who cares what, like, the quality or the angle or the light or the really, the whatever is. Like, I don't know. I just think that there's something to it. It's a smart campaign. It's been done before. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, get off your phones when another person's on their phone in the room. Like, obviously, if you ever date somebody and you're hanging out in the place, it's like your girlfriend will always hammer you. Like, you're always on your phone. Like, what? You're always mm-hmm. on your phone. Like, we're both always on our phone. Everybody's always on their phone, okay? Everybody's always on their phone. So, yeah, good idea by them. I don't think tacky at all. I think it's smart because we all want to strive to be Mark. We all want to have that moment where we break free of the shackles of our phones. It's just we're all so unbelievably addicted to them, and now we just spent a pandemic where we're all inside, like, only on
that
them.
That screen time thing on Sundays when it comes on your Apple notifications, so it's a humbling moment.
I'm a big get one early and put it away. First song of the concert, first inning of the game, first time you see someone after a while or whatever. Get one and then put the phone away. And I try to do that. I think I've gotten much better at that since we started this show, just because, like, I don't know, I feel there's a greater need to kind of disconnect at times to recharge and stuff with the kind of split shifts we do. But yeah, get one and out, and then be in the moment. You be not in the moment for a quick second and then be in the moment the rest of the time.
I love it. We can all be a little bit more like Mark and enjoy the moment.
The funny thing is, though, Mark probably just took the picture earlier, like, or he was about to take it.
I don't know. He looks like just a guy that showed up and wanted to live in the moment. And I don't know. Apparently, they had a tough time trying to track him down. Not a big social media guy. He's a little bit older.
That's what I
love. He's not some teenager on their phone.
Some dirty youth who can't get off their phone.
Some 18-year-old.
Addicted to their screen. You know what's funny? The people that I've seen the most addicted to their phones is like older people too, where it's like...
Well, that's because it takes them like 7 minutes to send a text. It's not really addicted so much as they just take a really long time to do stuff.
It's like, you know, whenever you see ads for games on your phone where you go, well, who would ever play this game? Like, who would ever... How is this game being marketed? It's like little kids, some of them, you hear the stories of like little kid racks up credit card bill playing some game, buying
Candy Crush boosters.
Yeah, like whatever. Yeah, exactly, Candy Crush. But for the most part, it's like, you know who I've noticed does that kind of stuff? Some of my friends' moms, just saying.
I think there's whole Facebook generation of moms that are just like, and my mom's one of them, where she got Facebook and she just scrolls it looking at recipes all day. And I'm like, it's like, you know how to cook that. You don't need to get a recipe for the best chicken noodle soup. Loves it.
I know. That's what
I actually
mean.
Like, deleted Facebook because it was just such a time waster. But anyway, be more like Mark. Get in the moment and try to enjoy it more, which is what the NFL is reportedly trying to do with the Pro Bowl. So viewership continues to go down. Lowest viewership in 16 years at this past event. So some fans were like, hey, like, here are some ideas. They're looking to maybe switch things up or get rid of it in general. So some suggestions on how to spice things up. I thought some of these were funny, and also text in your own and you guys can give me yours afterwards. But the two worst teams play each other for the number one draft pick. Have 30 kickers take part in a home run derby style kicking competition, an AFC bracket and an NFC bracket. And then the winners have a kickoff. Young Stars game, so first and second year players, which would help with creating new faces for the league and upping the intensity a bit, a little bit more on the line there. CFL All-Stars versus NFL All-Stars, and the rules are alternate to which country that the game is being held on. I think we know how that one would go.
I don't think we ever want to see that. Like, we don't want to see that one. Some of these options, I'm
clearly
like,
an American offered that one up.
No, the Americans are like, no, but not even the I think the CFL players, like, they'd just be happy to be there. But yeah, like,
that's true.
Oof, no.
And then the last one, which I thought was really fun, was kind of like a carnival of events. So, a quarterback, 85-yard ski ball, a wide receiver, furthest diving catch into a pool. Running back, dodgeball, hurdle course, and dizzy bat, which is a bachelorette favorite, tackling for the defensive end. So kind of like fun. Make it more fun is basically what people are saying.
Here's the thing with the Pro Bowl. Here's a couple things. One is that, the game clearly isn't working, and they kind of got to get rid of it. But Goodell is making actually a good point, which is they still have to find ways to market their stars and have a way to celebrate their stars. It's just like their All-Star game doesn't work. That's why the Young Stars game doesn't work either. Like, the idea that young guys are going to go, those guys haven't even been paid yet. You want them to go hit each other and play in an extra game when we're already adding more to the schedule, more playoff teams, more regular season games. Like, it ain't going to happen. The idea of more football is not going to happen. Obviously, this is about finding skills challenges that work for the players. There's also an issue of, like, the Pro Bowl has had this for years where it's like, guys want the trip, and a lot of guys do end up going to this thing. But one, you end up with no Super Bowl teams in it, so some of the best stars aren't there. And then two is that there are so many quarterbacks that usually don't go to this thing because they're making such big money that you end up with stuff where you go, how is Kirk Cousins at the Pro Bowl again? You go, I guess so. It's just there's non-engaging quarterbacks at the Pro Bowl just about every year. It just becomes non-desirable. So I remember there's a couple things. I liked when I used to watch the Pro Bowl and they had the All-Star Weekend set up where it was like receivers on the jugs machine. Just do the combine. Honest to God, like, I don't know why this is so hard. Get those guys there and do the combine. If you have guys that are Pro Bowl players run combine drills for money, then I would watch that. Like, I like watching the combine. Everybody watches the combine. I think, like, I'm either the dumbest guy or the smartest guy ever, because to me, it's like, that's the easy solution. Do the combine. Have the offensive linemen and defensive linemen do those drills. Have receivers run the gauntlet. Have guys run their 40 times. Like, every year, it's like Tyreek Hill and DK Metcalf are yelling at each other about who's faster. It's like, so race at the Pro Bowl. Like, why wouldn't we watch that? Like, it's just simple to me. Do the combine. If the NFL does this, I want money, because I've never seen anybody else have this take. Just do the combine. I've had years where they played dodgeball against each other. I was more excited to see the dodgeball than the game. And
that's
the dodgeball
amazing.
Sucked. Yeah, well, you think that it was crap. They didn't really try. And there's one try hard, that's going hard, but the rest of the guys are like, aha, and they're like barely trying. I'm going, no, try. Come on, guys. Like, I just want to see it. But yeah, no, do the combine.
Pro Bowl gym, let's go.
Pro Bowl combine every year. Go to the combine, be in the Pro Bowl. Don't know why. Like, I guess the downside of it from the player standpoint is they'd be like, oh, well, people would use this as our agents. It's like, no, just do it. Like, just go and do it. You think any receivers get less money because they lost in the gauntlet? They dropped some balls in the gauntlet drill. It's like, no. You're in the NFL. All that matters is the tape.
Yeah, I'm
any
with
suggestions?
You. I think it's cool. I think you could expand it beyond just the hey, these guys were arguing about who's the fastest. Let's run a race. Just have guys settle arguments like that in general.
Yeah.
You think you can outthrow a guy for distance and you've been talking smack about it?
That's
do it.
Exactly.
You think you
exactly.
can do the
car on the line or something?
Yeah, let's varsity blues it again and just like, can you hit your dad
so
in the
hard.
Nose with a football from 30 yards out?
Or like 100%. The winner gets to donate money to their own charity or something. There's got to be a way to make it more exciting
there is.
Than... Yeah, and you know
I am going to use a veto on the any involvement of a car or a car company after that. I think it was 2009 dunk contest, maybe 2011.
When Blake Griffin
contest.
Ruined the dunk contest, yeah. When they took the league's most exciting player, ruined the dunk contest, and then DeMar DeRozan cried like a little baby the whole time about props. Yeah. in a thing with props. Sorry, DeMar. I'm like, I love
you. Hey, guess what, DeMar? Even if there weren't props, JaVale McGee was the one who should have won that dunk contest.
And also, DeMar, even without props, your dunks were never really that great in an All-Star game.
You know, I did an oral history of that dunk contest at one point. It's like the only oral history I've ever done.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, well, I didn't know that was the only oral history you've ever done. But
I think
yeah,
it's the only one I've done.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk about Vlad versus Shohei. Vlad versus Trout. Narrative tipping points. And, yeah, frankly, like what we should expect from some of the misses from the Blue Jays offseason and those pressure points that are now kind of existing in the regular season. John Morosi next on the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Blake and Ehlers. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.